Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, online fitness coach, nutritionist, and 3 times best-selling author, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is with David A. Sinclair, PhD. This is a conversation I've been dying to have since I read his book a couple of years ago, Lifespan, Why We Age and Why We Don't Have To. And we have packed so much incredible content into these 41, 42 minutes of conversation. Just to give you an idea on the impact that David is having on my life and other people's life, he was voted one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people on earth. And in today's podcast, we talk all things aging when it comes to nutrition, diet, supplementation, longevity, and the misconceptions around aging, that it's not about getting older, it's about getting older but being younger while you do it. So much in this podcast. I'm going to be re-listening back a couple more times. I'm on the third read of his book. I go back on this one quite regularly because I get something different from it every time. So without further ado, here is this incredible conversation, one that I got so much from personally, with David Sinclair, PhD, on lifespan, why we age, and why we don't have to. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am delighted to be joined today with my guest, Dr. David Sinclair. Dr. Sinclair is a professor of genetics and co-director of Harvard Medical School Center for Biology of Aging Research. He's the author of the great book, Lifespan, Why We Age and Why We Don't Have To, and the host of the great podcast, Lifespan, with Dr. David Sinclair, that covers topics such as the science behind why we age and interventions for slowing and even reversing aging. I'm looking forward to talking all things health, aging, and longevity in today's episode. Dr. Sinclair, welcome to the podcast.
Brian, thanks for having me on.
Before we dive into the book, and as I said right before we went on air, I love Lifespan and I love the podcast. As a podcast host, I'm a podcast listener and I get so much from your content. So we will jump around on those topics as we go through. But before we do that, can you talk to us a little bit about your backstory and kind of what got you interested in aging and lifespan research in general?
Yeah, I was a fairly average kid in Sydney, Australia. I now live in Boston, USA. And I grew up on the edge of the bush. This is how my book begins. And I was fascinated with living things. There were lots of snakes and spiders, lizards, and I would see them every day. I'd go on bushwalks. So biology, it had to be. And my parents were both biochemists, so they were talking about feces and urine at the dinner table. So this was my life. It's all about health and the way things work. And I've got this curiosity that still is with me. I still am an inner 12-year-old at age 52 now. And I just want to know how things work. I just can't stand looking at something and not understanding its inner workings. And I used to pull cars apart and my dad's tools and couldn't really put them back together very well. But I parlayed that into a degree in biology. I was going to do medicine, actually, but I haven't admitted this publicly, but as a teenager, I didn't really have a lot of empathy for other human beings on the planet. So I thought, you know, I'll just figure out how they work. That'll be interesting. I'm not like that now. No, my vision is to help many people live many, many decades longer and, you know, make the world a much better place. But, you know, when you're 18, you care about two things, passing and girls, well, at least if you're me. Anyway, so that was my upbringing. But I've always had a fascination with aging because my grandmother, who partially raised me because my mother was working, and she was a young grandmother. She was in her 40s when I was a kid, having had my father at age 15. And so she was a fairly bohemian type, and she would try to give me an education that was different than usual. So she taught me how to be rebellious. She would drive her car down the roads, swerving to the classical music. And so I grew up rebellious. She also told me point blank when I was 4 years old that everybody dies and it's not fun and my cat is going to die and she's going to die. My parents are going to die and then I'm going to die. As a 4 year old who's grown up on Disney movies, that is a real shock. And I still remember the moment. I remember the carpet. It was orange and prickly, 1970s. And I was crying on the carpet and I haven't really recovered from that moment. So I've spent my life working on trying to understand why. Do we need to age? Why does it happen? And can we do something to slow? And now actually we know it may even be possible to reverse it.
And something that I've completely, when people say paradigm shift and life changer, I think, of your book and the way it made me see aging, because I had all these misconceptions and all these, some of the thoughts and some of the things you put through are ideas that when you back it up and you start to speak about it, I'm like, oh my God, I've been really limited with how far I effectively thought this is just something that happens. You can't reverse it. There's no way to do this. And I, my mind completely closed off to it. So not only did I get such a huge paradigm shift when it came to aging, it opened up my mind to a lot of other areas off the back of it. And in lifestyle, in lifespan, you break it into kind of three main sections, that the past, the present, the future. Let's talk about the past, because I think that's a nice little jumping off point, because I do want to focus on the present and where it's going in the future for sure. But I think it gives us a nice little jumping off point, as I said, a foundation to build upon. Talk to us about that, because it lends into the misconceptions, some of the myths that we had. Talk to us about the past of aging and lifespan research in general.
Right. So I also have a training in evolutionary biology, and it helps me see how we work now and how we can change it to be better. And in the book, I go back to a scene, which is the very beginning of life and how it formed on this brutal planet. And those organisms that gave rise to us were battling for survival under very extreme conditions. And there were, as soon as there were genes that caused you to grow and to suck in energy, but there also needed to be genes that made you survive under those conditions. And we have those genes in our bodies now. They're called sirtuins, and I was part of a team that linked them to health and aging in the 1990s at MIT. And so the idea is that we have these very ancient protective genes for survival, and they keep us healthier for longer. But today's lifestyle, unfortunately, because we have cars, we have even suitcases with wheels on them, we don't need to do a lot of exercise, and we can eat pretty much any junk food we want, and a lot of people do. These genes don't work very hard. They don't think they need to work hard because they don't sense adversity. They only come on when they think times are tough. And so what my work has been about is to figure out how these early genes that we first discovered in yeast cells, little yeast that you use to make bread and beer, how those genes have now morphed into the genes in our bodies, that how do we turn them on and how do we use them to our advantage to keep us healthier now and well into the future?
You give me an indirect segue to something that I was going to come back to later. One of my favorite podcast episodes you did in the first season that ended recently, I think it was episode 3, with exercise, heat, cold, and other stressors for longevity. And you talked about that the genes don't sense adversity. Talk to us about how things like, and I know fasting falls into this bracket as well, so we will talk on the nutrition side. Talk to us about how our genes need that adversity in order to respond in a positive way.
Yeah, so first of all, these genes, these sirtuins, these are enzymes that control other proteins that help repair DNA. They boost the energy in the body. They lower inflammation. They improve things like memory as well, protect the brain. And so we need them to be switched on, but unfortunately they get switched off as we get older, and the clock starts ticking even faster. And they literally also control the clock that we can talk about in a minute, but we know there's a biological clock we can measure. And so what we've learned is that they can be activated, reactivated in middle age and late age, and even in young people, by doing certain things, taking certain things like supplements, and exposing the body generally to what I call adversity mimetics, these mimics of adversity, as opposed to the abundance mimetics, which are things like a lot of meat, a lot of fat, testosterone injections. These things will put the body in a state of it, abundance. We want the opposite. We want some times of adversity, or at least perceived adversity. So it's lose your breath, lose the amount of oxygen in your body. Don't have a lot of amino acids all the time. Don't have a lot of glucose, which is sugar and sucrose in our diet. Don't sit down, get a standing desk, use your muscles, use your brain. And you can also take in foods that stimulate these sirtuins, such as oleic acid in avocados and olive oil, resveratrol from red wine. And you don't need to eat or drink a lot of these foods. You can actually take them as supplements these days, as long as you look for really pure product. And I've been doing all of those things for really my 30s and 40s and now into my 50s. I really think it's paying off now. And I think people often ask me, when should you start? And I wouldn't start when you're still developing. We don't know the effects on the body, but once you've matured and you're in your 20s, I think it's never too early to start these things.
Yeah, something I took off the back of your book, I drastically reduced my meat intake and the amount of amino acids I consumed. As somebody with a traditional fitness background, you know, I used to do competitive bodybuilding. I was an athlete playing sport before that. So you can imagine it's the complete opposite side, that overstate of abundance. And obviously priority shifted in my 30s, and health and longevity and all these things kind of became the main pillar that I tried to focus on. But I reduced back my meat intake and amino acids off the back of your book. With, you said right before we went on air, and I definitely want to unpack this because I follow your content daily, but again, having the opportunity to talk to you, you've made some changes over the last year, 2 years in particular. What were some of those changes? Were they nutritional? Was it, you know, stressors that you've started to add in, or what have been some of the changes you've made in your own life, David?
Yeah. So mainly dietary and mental health in the last 8 months. Before that, I'll just lead up to that. I've always skipped breakfast. I'm not a big breakfast guy. I've tried to eat a small lunch, and I usually have a large dinner, and that's my lifestyle. But I've never been, at least until the last year, I wasn't able to get my body weight down to a level where I, you know, you could see my abs nicely, and except in my 20s. And then I switched to skipping lunch as well, and having little snacks, maybe some nuts or a little bit of chocolate during the day. I don't totally go without food during the day, but I nibble. But my main meal is dinner. And that means that I only have one main meal a day. And that fasting has allowed me to do a couple of things. One is I've lost weight. I got my 20-year-old body back, which is nice to see again. High abs. And then I find that I have more energy and I enjoy food more. The type of food that I eat now is chosen ahead of time. And I really pay a lot of attention to what I eat now, as opposed to just shoving it in my mouth and not even thinking about it. And I love that. And as a result, my blood biochemistry, which I measure routinely, has gone to levels that, again, I haven't seen since my 20s and are often better than 20-year-olds. But also, I just feel better. And also on mental health, what I've done is I've started meditation. And I should really say that I had a person come into my life who has encouraged me to do this. I wasn't able to do it myself, and I didn't really have the willpower or the knowledge. And so she's also on social media. It's Serena Poon, Chef Serena Poon. And so I met her at a conference here in Boston, and we became friends. And she's been telling me, advocating a vegan diet as well as meditation. I've adopted both of those, and I haven't looked back.
You have seen her TikTok. Do you TikTok stuff together? Would I be right in saying that?
We're doing a lot together these days. We're really good friends. And so we've got some Instagram lives that are on YouTube now. I'll give you the link to that so people can go see us. We just chat, and she's an expert in nutrition as well as longevity treatments in a way that I didn't even know. I'm doing the research. I don't tend to go to doctor's offices to see what the doctors are doing, but Serena does. And she opened my eyes to that world of, well, we can talk later about these things, but IVs and pills and things to do with your mind that were coming out of my research and others that work similarly. And it's a good combination, the two of us. We really are complementary. I've got the molecules and she's got the practical, and we've taught each other both those things.
Brilliant. And again, it makes for some great content. And the next question I'm going to ask, and I know it's an absolute Pandora's box, and this is definitely a question that you don't enjoy getting when someone's like, well, tell us the best thing for longevity and aging. But if you were to pick something that has the most positive benefit that can probably be easily implemented when it comes to someone who wants to reverse aging or focus on longevity, what would you put as a bracket, or what would you say is the top focus that's probably the most straightforward? Because the book goes through so many, and the podcast even more, because it's that conversation between the two of you. What would you say, David, when I say that? And again, I apologize in advance for a Pandora's box, but I am curious to hear what you're going to say on it.
No, it's a fair question. I get that all the time. What's the quickest, easiest way to live longer? You know, everybody wants a quick solution. And honestly, there isn't just one quick solution. But if there was only one thing I could recommend that's made the biggest impact on my life, it was to eat less often. You can eat the same amount unless you want to lose a bit of weight. But it means having one or, you know, maybe 1.5 meals a day. Try not to eat late in the day. Either skip dinner or breakfast if you can, so you get that sleep. Fasting plus a meal, absence of a meal. And by doing that, I've just found that All my blood biochemistry has improved, literally all of it. I feel better. But here's the thing that's tough and why most people don't do it. It takes a few weeks for your liver to get used to it. And why your liver? Because your liver does gluconeogenesis. It makes its own glucose. Most people don't realize that our body makes its own sugar. We don't need to intake sugar. But it doesn't do that for the first few weeks. Your liver says, hey, I'd rather you eat it. I don't want to have to make it. And so the liver gets pretty lazy. But once you wake it up and get it to work every day, I actually don't need to eat. I don't feel hungry. You know, I eat those nuts and chocolate because I'm peckish, but I don't feel hungry until late in the afternoon. And that took 3 or 4 weeks to happen. And in the meantime, what you should do is drink a lot of fluids, teas, coffees, great, matcha is even better, I think. I've got one here. And then after 3 weeks, if you still are suffering and you can't bear it, then I think try it a little bit longer, go for a month. But other than that, I think that you'll find that it becomes pretty easy. And just remember that hunger isn't real. Hunger is just a hormone in your blood that's telling your brain that it needs or wants you to eat. Doesn't mean you need it. And that helps too, to realize it's just psychological.
I think it's really important to break that down, as you said, for people, because it's the misconception that holds us back. People come, and I've been this person that's slave to hunger, where your entire day is planned around your meal times. And there's a freedom that fasting can give, something that I've been doing for the last 4 years. But pre that, I couldn't even dream of it. My day focused around my food. With misconceptions around aging and longevity in general, what are some of the ones that you tend to see? Is it all generally around the fasting and dietary side, or do you see other misconceptions when it comes to people just not having the right knowledge, information, or education around aging and longevity?
Oh, there are dozens of misconceptions, even from the beginning when I started in this field, that antioxidants are the solution. That they're not. I mean, they're helpful, but they're not going to extend your lifespan. Or antioxidants haven't extended the lifespan of pretty much any organism that they've been given to. So when you see on the shelf, drink this for antioxidants, be skeptical. What really we've realized is that there are longevity genes that keep us alive. So most people yet don't realize that our body has enormous capacity to heal and live longer if we just treat it the right way and give it the signals, which, I've just talked about, and we'll talk about more. So a big misconception, let's tick them off. That when I talk about living longer, I'm not talking about being older for longer. Mm. If I say you can make it to 100, and I think that's very achievable, then we're not talking about being an old, decrepit person. That's why a lot of people don't even want to try. What we're talking about is being as young in your 80s and 90s as you were in your 40s and 50s, like my father is, and he's on my regimen too. And so we're really talking about staying younger for longer, not older for longer. And that's an important distinction. The other is, as you said, Brian, it's generally believed that aging is not something that you can do anything about, that it is natural. Of course, it's natural, but so is cancer, heart disease, and Alzheimer's. And my mantra in my book is aging is also a medical condition. Aging is a disease. And guess what? That disease is also treatable. And it's a mindset to think of that. We need to think of it that way, because just because it's common doesn't mean it's any better or less worse than a disease that affects a minority of people. It's a condition that causes us to lose our ability to see, to hear, to function, to love, to learn, to remember. It's a horrible disease. It's one of the worst chronic diseases you can have. And the truth is that we all are susceptible. But the good news is we can do something about it. Another misconception is that our birthdays matter. It turns out that our chronological age, our birthday candles, and really the number of times the earth has gone around the sun is fairly irrelevant to our health. You can be super healthy in your 90s or you can be dead. And it can really depend on how you live your life. The other misconception is that your genes are your destiny. DNA is your destiny. Not true. When it comes to longevity, 80% is determined by you and how you've lived your life. Another misconception is that you cannot have an effect on your age, your longevity, until late in life. You can wait. Turns out that you're aging from conception. That clock we can measure, it goes up every day. It's ticking all the time. And to get the biggest bang for the buck in your life, you need to start early. And then the last one is you can fake it. You, that actually what I want to say, Brian, actually is more important, is that often people have this aversion to knowing things. I don't want to know my genetics. I don't want to know how long I'm going to live, which, by the way, I can tell you. I don't want to know if I've got a gene for Alzheimer's disease, mutation, or an allele, as we call it. Now, I hear that every day, actually. And my response is, knowledge is power. And knowledge is not going to change, is not going to make it worse, that's for sure. And it's very likely to make it better. And if you know that something is coming, you can actually act to change it. And, you know, understandable, if you can't do anything about it, why do you need to know? But if you can do something about it, you absolutely should know. And we can do that now. We can measure our health, our longevity perspectives, and also for diseases that are coming, and take action early.
Something we're going to talk about towards the end of the podcast for people is the biological age test and the website, you know, tallyhealth.com, where we're going to explore that a little bit more. But I'm very curious. You mentioned your regimen there, and you go through parts of this in the book. I know it gets talked on in the podcast. Outside of fasting and now following a plant-based vegan, more of a vegan-based diet, what are some of the other things that are included in your regimen when it comes to what you do daily or weekly in terms of just how you apply it to your own life? You mentioned your dad is on it as well, but curious to hear how you're doing it.
So I've done a lot of things. I experiment on myself because it's faster than doing clinical trials on thousands of people, though I am doing that as well. And we have some promising results. One way that we can quickly move forward, besides looking at how long people live on a particular regimen, is to measure the clock. You mentioned tallyhealth.com. That's a test that I've developed that can measure your biological age. It measures your DNA and particularly chemicals that are on the DNA that change with age, and we can see those change over time. And I've used that clock to measure how I'm doing. I've actually done that test and some other blood tests that tell me that I'm about a decade younger than my actual birthday candles would say. And so I've learned what works and what doesn't work for me. Now, the disclaimer is I'm not a physician. I'm a PhD. I don't offer advice and recommendations. I give information. And what works for me may not work for others. And then you should, if you change your lifestyle, particularly if you start taking supplements, you should let your doctor know and make sure it's all okay. Because if you're on other medicines or you have particular susceptibilities, your doctor should know. So with all that said, I have been finding that a certain regimen of supplements has been very helpful. I take a number of them. It's not thousands, not hundreds, but it is, you know, if you come into my bathroom, you'll see a number of bottles and in my fridge. And I started off on one, which was resveratrol. We discovered that activates sirtuins in 2003. And then the global sales of red wine went up by 40% and stayed up. But you can't drink red wine to get enough resveratrol. Resveratrol actually directly activates SIRT1, which is one of these defensive enzymes. So I've been taking a gram of resveratrol for most of my adult life since 2003. And it's been shown in many clinical trials to be beneficial to many organs. So I continue to take that. It also prevents cancer and seems to slow down the infectiousness of viruses. So for all those reasons, I keep taking it. The second one I take is one called NMN, which is short for nicotinamide mononucleotide. NMN is the precursor to NAD, and NAD is a chemical that we need for life. It's involved in 500 chemical reactions, roughly, but it also controls the sirtuins, and they need it for their activity to defend us. And we lose NAD over time. We don't make as much. So I supplement with that. And I know this raises my NAD levels back up to a 20-year-old and even higher, doubles, triples it. And that I take daily a gram of. And then the third cornerstone is metformin, which is a diabetes drug. You need to have that from your doctor or online a doctor. And that has been shown to associate with longer life. And even diabetics, type 2 diabetics who have high blood sugar, who take metformin, are healthier and live longer than people that don't have type 2 diabetes, which is a remarkable statistic. But it seemed to protect, and I say seems because it's very hard to prove, it seemed to protect against cancer and heart disease, frailty and Alzheimer's disease. So for that reason, I take it. And I also want to make sure my blood sugar levels stay steady and relatively low. I measure it every day, by the way. I don't know, Brian, if you could see me holding my phone up to my arm here, but I measure it And I'm holding up to the screen, but for those of you who don't see this, you can see that I had a big spike at dinner last night. It was 6 p.m. That was pasta. But after that, I've been very good and I haven't eaten anything much. The resveratrol, I should say, a lot of people just pop resveratrol into their mouth and swallow it. That's not very effective. I have it with a couple of spoonfuls of yogurt, vegan yogurt now, and it dissolves. So you can also have it with olive oil. And the reason I bring that up, even though it's quite specific, is that it's hard to take supplements the right way. How much should you take for your body type, your sex, your metabolism, your genetics? When should you take it? What should you take it with? Is it harmful? Is it not? What age to take it? These are all questions that I do partially address in the book, Lifespan, but I also in the podcast go into more detail. And then a lot of the detail also is in the YouTube with Serena Poon, who we mentioned earlier. So there's a lot of information out there for everybody, depending on your interest and dedication to your own health and longevity.
And I will be linking that for everybody, the YouTube channel, the podcast, the books in the show notes. So it'll be very easy to click on through and head straight over to that. But just to stay on something that I'm curious about, you mentioned resveratrol there from 2003, that you've been using it since for that long. Over the last 10 years, you're on the breakthrough of all the research when it comes to this area. Is there anything that surprised you in the last 10 years when you started to go down the rabbit hole, either supplementation or dietary, or when it comes to some of the stresses we talked about or something completely different? David, was there anything that when you started to go down that rabbit hole, it was really surprising that this actually had such a positive impact that you didn't think it potentially would?
On myself or in the lab?
Either.
Well, I'll address both. So for myself, I tried a course of what are called senolytics. These are molecules. Some of them are naturally occurring. If you have a pen, write down the words quercetin and fizetin. If you just Google my name, you'll see these products. I don't sell anything, but they show up. These two natural molecules will, we think, and a lot of evidence says it's true, will kill or at least suppress the activity of senescent cells, which are the old zombie cells in your body that cause inflammation, can cause cancer, diabetes. And there's a growing body of evidence that in humans, if you take these molecules, there's a drug called dasatinib as well that looks effective in combination with quercetin. This is Jim Kirkland's work at the Mayo Clinic. When you get rid of these cells from the body, there are remarkable health benefits. And so I tried that during COVID. I took a course of these molecules for a month and I saw that my skin improved. I had, I'm, you know, 52 now, and I think my skin is still as good as it was when I was 30, and it actually looks better. If you look at photos of me now versus 10 years ago, I do look better. And it's not about vanity, it's about science, but this is one of the things that shocked me, that it's actually possible to not just feel better and have a healthier body, but to also look better as well. And that's important, right? Because our skin is the biggest organ in our body, and it's an indicator of how healthy we are on the inside as well.
Yeah, you did a great podcast with Skin and Collagen, The Science of Looking Younger for Longer, I think it was titled. It's a great podcast for anyone that's looking for the skin specific around, you know, how to potentially, you know, take the vanity side. Like, it's a health, wellness, and fitness podcast. There's vanity in all of us. So it's good for me and for the rest of the audience. What about the lab then? Was there anything that came across that really was surprising to you? Or even to take that in a slightly different direction with the research you're doing now, is there anything that you're particularly excited about?
Well, I've been so fortunate in my career to have the kind of discoveries that typically occur once in a lifetime, if you're lucky. And I've had probably a dozen of those moments where, you know, you have to pinch yourself to believe that it's true or that it's actually happening. And the biggest one that happened was just as I was writing my book, and it was actually recorded and written. The scene is in the book. And my student was struggling for 2 years to try to find a backup copy of Youthful Information in the Body. And one of the real themes, paradigm shifts of thinking in my book and my research is that the body's aging process is due to a loss of information that we have when we're young. And it's not the genetic information, it's the actual the readers of the DNA, which we call the epigenome. And the inability to read the genes at the right time, I think, is the main cause of aging. So Wan Cheng, the student, was looking for a way to perhaps reset that epigenetic information. Is there a backup copy so that cells start reading their genes the right way again? And we didn't know it existed. We knew that you could reset a cell back to age zero because there was a Nobel Prize in 2016 awarded for that to Shinya Yamanaka in Japan. But reversing the age of a cell or our bodies to zero would be the worst thing you could do because you'd just turn into a giant tumor. You'd be dead. So we were looking for ways to partially reverse the age of the cell. And Wan Cheng tried for 2 years and failed, and he was about to quit. And I said, just try one more time. I have a really good feeling this time. You're going to get... So actually, my job as a scientist these days is setting big goals and then making sure people don't quit in the process of trying to get there. And so he went back to the lab, and a few months later, he was doing an experiment where he had shown in the lab in cells that he could reverse the age of skin cells of humans, partially, not all the way to zero, but you know, maybe 70%. And he said he wants to try to see if he could cure blindness using this age reversal method. And I thought that was ridiculous because that's a very hard thing to do. Why don't you start by reversing the age of the liver? That would be easy. So no, he's stubborn. He went for the eye and he pinched the eye of a mouse, which the optic nerve. And this is a model for regeneration of the body. And so normally optic nerves don't regrow. Anyone who's damaged their brain or their optic nerve or their back knows this. But what he found was that when we reversed aging in the eye, those nerves grew back. They started growing back to the brain. And eventually we learned that we could actually cure blindness in mice, at least, and we hope in humans. But the moment was just, it seared into my memory where he texted me a picture of the optic nerve regrowing. And he didn't even explain it. He just sent it. But I immediately knew what it was. And then he texted me after a few seconds of my heart stopping. He said, David, do you see what I see? And I said, yeah. And he goes, yeah, what do you see? And I replied, the future. And that was the most exciting time of my life because we'd figured out how to safely reverse aging in a very complex tissue. And it's true, there is a backup copy of youth in all of our cells.
I love that. And it ties in beautifully to the final part of the book, which is the third part, the future. Talk to us about the shape of things to come. I think you've given us a nice little a segue into that. That's incredibly exciting, as you mentioned. But talk to us about where you think it's going. Where do you think aging is going? What do you think are, and you can go off on whatever tangent you want on this and in any direction, but where do you think we're going in the next, you know, talk your span? Are you talking 50 years, 100 years plus? Talk to us about that, about the future and where we're going.
Right. Well, having successfully and safely reversed aging in the eye, we went on to reverse aging in this. We're doing the skin and we're doing liver, and others have done spleen. We've done different parts of the eye. So it looks to be a universal process. It's not just that we were fortunate we picked the right tissue. So the future looks like this, that over the next few years, there will be clinical trials in people to reverse the age of the parts of their body. I am confident someone is going to be successful or some company is going to be successful. And how can I say that with confidence? Well, this field that has just emerged, we call it partial reprogramming or rejuvenation. There are hundreds of labs that have jumped into this. There have been more than $4 billion with a B, billion dollars invested into it. The most famous being Jeff Bezos and his crew, who have started a company called Altos. I also have a company called Life Biosciences that is working on curing blindness, glaucoma, hopefully. So it's going to happen. And that's what's exciting, is that once you've opened up this box, it's going to happen. It's like once you've proven that you can have powered flight, it's inevitable that you have a Boeing 747 and a Concorde. And that's really where we are with aging now. So in the future, hopefully within our lifetimes, I think within the next 10 to 15 years, so stay alive for as long as you can, because this technology is going to enable us to take a pill that will reverse our age by as much as we want. and do it safely. So your doctor may prescribe you a pill, it'll get delivered, you'll take it for a month, and you will literally go back 10 or 20 years. And then you'll visit your doctor again or get a prescription 20 years later. And of course, you'll be monitored by devices. Right now, it's possible for me to monitor my body instead of once a year physical, 1,000 times a second with this a bio button that I stick on my chest. It measures my heart, my movement, my body heat. My bed is even measuring me and controlling temperature. It knows more about my sex life than probably anybody. My ring is measuring me. You know, we've got watches and wrist devices. We're entering a world where it's no longer going to be that we just have a heart attack or some other medical condition without warning. We'll know if we're about to get cancer. We'll know if we're about to have a heart attack, and we can take action before it actually harms us.
Until we get there, what are the top three things you recommend people doing? And it may be doubling back on things we've already discussed, but for those who are listening, who are excited about the future and want myself in that bracket to get there as healthily as possible, what are the top three things you recommend we do?
Right. Well, there are the common things that doctors recommend that can give you 14 years of extra life on average. Just very quickly, obviously, you want to lose your breath three times a week, at least. Do 10,000 steps a day if you can, at least 7,000. You want to get enough sleep. You want to be relaxed. You want to have friends around or have a pet, have a reliable partner if you can. These things all work. Eat less often. I mentioned that's very, very critical. Don't have three big meals a day and snack in between. You've got to give your body a chance to feel adversity. Try to limit the amount of meat, because the amount of amino acids you get from that just turns off your body's defenses. And then you can also expose your body to some hot and cold therapy. That's a little bit more advanced. But those things, I think, are the most important. Supplementation, I talk about. You can find it in my book. Page 304, I give a list of the things that I do and my father does. So I know that's more than three. But I think the most important are the lifestyles. To eat less often and focus on plants if you can. And then generally just be more mindful of life and have a purpose. Don't stress, get enough sleep. All those good things are super important as well. And they're super easy to do.
Yeah, low-hanging fruit for the most part. And thankfully, people who've been long-term listeners of this podcast, they know success leaves clues, and you're giving us clues that we know. Focus on our nutrition, focus on our sleep, have the good stressors, be around good people. And it just, I think it's a double downing off the back of this podcast. David, I love this conversation. I just have one final question before we tell people where they can go for the biological age test, as we mentioned earlier, where they can pick up the book. But you're up to a lot. And as I said, you've had such an impact on my life personally, but the world as a whole with your research. So I'm so grateful for it. But you're doing a lot of things right now. And I know we touched on right before we went on air, so I'm not sure if you can mention it live. So I'll let you go in this direction. But what are you personally most excited about right now?
I'm excited about making age reversal a pill. So in my lab, we're working very hard on that. I'm excited in my personal life about, I'm learning to have a higher level of consciousness. I know that sounds woo-woo, but I'm actually, and this is again, Serena Poon's influence on me. I've been going around the world trying to be humble, but really, you know, your ego always gets the best of you. And I'm really trying to diminish that ego and focus on serving others. And so that's what I'm excited about. And then on the health side, this vegan diet has turned out to be great. I'm going to continue that. And then I guess I'm most excited about putting out products and more information that the world can utilize. The clock is called Tally Health. You can sign up at tallyhealth.com. We're looking for beta users, be one of the first in line, hopefully. On top of that, I'm putting out some consumer products that for the first time, I'm going to venture into that space. I've previously just done advice and pharmaceuticals. But so watch for that. That's coming out. The podcast, I'm going to do a second season this year. And I'm working on a second book that, as much as Lifespan was the textbook and somewhat of a guidebook, this one's going to be the how-to, all the questions you've asked but didn't have the answers to book. And that one will probably come out later this year or early next. But in the meantime, I'll keep putting out a lot of things on social media. I'm on Instagram, Twitter. I do these chats with Serena, and we post those on YouTube and Twitter as well. So yeah, it's really all about educating and making people, giving everyone who's listening here the information to live a much longer, healthier life, not just another couple of years, but potentially decades longer, which is something that I think all of us not only want, but really just have a right to have. And the information is what makes that possible.
That is perfect and a brilliant way for us to finish. And the second book, I cannot wait. As somebody that is currently through my third reread, I listened to the audiobook and then the physical copy, and now I'm on my second physical read. It's what I think is so good about it, just to give people that final call to action to it, is you have all the science in there, but you have stories mixed in with it that makes it very digestible, even for somebody that's not that schooled into science. So I think regardless of where you're coming from, whether you're a beginner just interested in aging and longevity, or you're a certified personal trainer, strength and conditioning coach, nutritionist listening to this podcast, you're catering to everybody within that. And again, I think it's why it's had such a profound impact on people's lives. So as I said, I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for the work you do. The podcast I love. So that's my hard sell to people. Go and check out the podcast. It's brilliant. I can't wait for season two already. And David, I can't thank you enough for your time. I know you're so busy and you've had a hectic schedule and you're doing so many things. So thank you so much for your time and for all the incredible work that you do.
Oh, Brian, flattery will get you everywhere. No, it's really great to be on. And, you know, I get asked to go on podcasts pretty often. And when you asked me, it was a no-brainer. I just wanted to come on, and I'm really glad I did. Thank you.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you so much again. There you have it. David Sinclair, PhD on lifespan, why we age and why we don't have to. I told you there was a lot packed in these 41, 42 minutes, and some takeaways from me that I'm going to be thinking about, definitely my fasting regimen and some other things. I'm going to have a think on this, on what I got from today's podcast. And if you're interested in that, you can subscribe to my weekly newsletter. Every Thursday, I send out a top three takeaways from that week's podcast. I'm really looking forward to doing this week's one in particular, because I got a lot more than three. So I'm going to have to figure out what are my top three ones. So to sign up for that, just head over to the website or click the link in the description for the website, briankeenfitness.com, and you can pop your email into the newsletter on there, and you will get my email top three takeaways from that week's podcast every single Thursday. That's everything from me for this week. Thank you so much for listening. If this is your first time listening, be sure to hit that follow and subscribe for episodes coming every single Monday. And if you're a long-term listener, be sure to pop it up in your Instagram stories and or leave a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. That's all from me. Catch you all next Monday.